I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita.
Good evening, Vashon Island. And welcome to the Cats and Jammer Follies. I am Megan Hastings, and this is a travel story show. Today, we have a very special birthday guest. I happen to be married to him, and his name is Mr. Adam Patrick Cohn. Happy birthday to you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Megan. It's nice to be back.
As our dear friend in Austria likes to say while she's sucking on a cigarette, happy birthday.
Yes, you got to really love the Austrian ability to use adjectives.
It's one of my favorite things. In fact, we woke up this morning and I was like, "Oh, Adam, happy birthday! How are you?"
It's been really great. Tons of rain and not going anywhere, but I feel so happy to be here at this studio with you guys.
And you get to be having another birthday.
I know, and I'm having.
And how
another
old
birthday.
Are you today?
Well, gosh.
Do you want to tell us? Are you feeling shy?
I'm not, you know, I'm hanging right in there. I'm 52 years old.
Whoa,
this morning.
Dude. Whoa.
Kaboom. Right. Born just before the alleged moon landing. It's just
How
crazy.
Did that happen? How did you get to be 52?
I don't fucking, I don't know. It's wild. But yeah. But here he is, right?
And here he is. Right. All right. Well, I'm going to read a story first that happens to be set around the same time that Mr. Adam and I met many moons ago in the winter of 1991 in Chicago.
I thought we met in 1738.
When we were...
Don't tell anybody.
When we were bats and Dracula.
Bats and, exactly. Transylvania. That's my story.
That is your story, I think. He hasn't told me his story yet, so it's going to be new to me as it is going to be new to you. All right, I'm going to begin. Winter of 1991, Chicago. Streets lined with blackened snow, and the good people of the city were bundled up tight. I had befriended a kid I was going to school with named Aaron. He was funny and filled with crazy stories. At that time in the world, the music scene of the youth was undoubtedly grunge rock. It was all the rage, and all the angsty youth held onto every chord. The epicenter was, of course, Seattle, a city I was desperate to visit for this reason. Aaron, who was from Seattle, had yet oddly never even heard of it. I was shocked with amazement that he had never even heard of the band Soundgarden. It was oddly intriguing. We spent a fair amount of time together, had many first-year art foundation classes. I knew a lot about what was going on in his world, but one thing was that his older brother was graduating from art school in Seattle and was coming to spend a semester with him. I didn't think much about it at the time. Then an afternoon came where Aaron and I went back to his apartment, a garden apartment, and his brother had come a few days before, and on the kitchen counter was the makings for lasagna. So Aaron and I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice to make this for him? And then he can just come home and eat and not have to fuss with anything. So we did just that. A few hours later, I was sitting on the couch with the oldie station on in the background with some 50s crooner making his way through a song. When I see this brother coming in slowly, he entered. He had long curly hair, dirty jeans, and a flannel. Typical Seattle. In fact, he's wearing a flannel right now. He looked at me and I thought, oh, he's the super cute brother. Okay, I get what's happening now. He looked around the kitchen and could see that we had made the lasagna. Aaron was getting a mouthful from him. I quietly got up to leave. I was looking for my coat when he came over, introduced himself, and said, you don't have to leave. Maybe it's better if I leave. I think I'm going to go. Aaron came over, and they were both trying to convince me to stay as I was lighting a cigarette on my way out the door. I did, in fact, stay, and as per Adam's suggestion, we all went to have a beer. Almost every block in this neighborhood of mine would have at least one bar, sometimes two. Winter is very long. The one closest to their house was nestled in a small intersection and was called the Beechwood Inn, after the street. We walked in and ordered Leinenkugels, many of them. The bartender was an odd fellow who liked to impersonate Abraham Lincoln. He looked like, dressed like, and had his mannerisms. One can imagine that this would be quite enjoyable for a few underage drinkers in that particular bar. We huddled in the corner and got to know one another. I got to see a more relaxed version of this Adam, and I liked it. His eyes were so blue, striking blue, an incredible smile that made my heart feel all sorts of emotions. He had Seattle stories that I wanted and had a great laugh. Over the next few months that he was in Wicker Park, we would meet, hang out, talk mostly about Italy and the Jackson Five, and how one day we would live on a houseboat and only listen to the Jackson Five and dress our kids up in 1970s clothes. We dreamed about traveling the world together. We would eventually do that, but not for many years to come. Some dumb other factors would stop us for about another 10 years. One of my last memories before he left Chicago was he met Aaron and I at school. We walked around the downtown. We jumped into a taxi. We sat quietly. We had to, really. The taxi driver had on Springsteen's Born in the USA, blaring so loudly. I snuggled into him, caught his eye, and we just laughed and laughed. And I knew he was going to be my forever person to travel in this life with. He got me, really got who I was, and I did him. The end of summer, I did come out to Seattle. By then, he was living in Green Lake in a small apartment. He quit his job when I came there so he could spend time with me. Aaron didn't, so we got to have a lot of time, just he and I. It was on the grass, on the lake, where we would sit and smile at each other. And he finally kissed me for the very first time, a kiss that would stay with me for years. I never forgot it. We've been married now for almost 15 years, and I still feel the same way about him as I did then. Happy birthday to you, Mr. Adam Cohn. Forever and ever, may we enjoy this life like we did that first kiss. Mr. Adam Patrick Cohn.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready?
That's quite an act to follow, Megan. I had no idea what you were writing. I thought it was something entirely else. But in the tradition of birthday stories, I too was composing something that you don't know about from some notes and sketches, napkins taken from a holiday that you and I traveled together to Romania and Bulgaria years ago.
Many.
It's a birthday story as well. You celebrate a birthday. Is that correct? In 3 days?
I do, as a matter of fact. Right. Yeah. Adam and I have the craziness of having birthdays 3 days apart from each other.
It's good for Capricorns to be together because we're both right.
But it's very hard to find gifts.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe you should let people know that. What is it, a special birthday or just a regular old birthday?
It's a special birthday.
Right.
Yeah.
Right on. We'll leave it at that. My story is a little longer than some, and so thank you for bearing with me, but I think you're going to enjoy it. It reads like some little vignettes, and it travels well, like a fairy tale. It's called Under a Bulgarian Moon. Sunday morning, Bucharest, Romania, May 20th, 2012. Morning doves. The streets are quiet, and we wake to Romanian thunderstorms outside our basement room here in Bucharest. Dogs barking, in motley packs of two and three, sandy fur and cocked heads alert as we pass by cautiously en route to procure train tickets from the station in early morning. Flower sellers rest publicly for one more hour in the quiet twilight of a new day, early morning within the city center. Small heaters slow red burn, and there are blankets arranged carefully about chair and Gerber daisy, long-stemmed rose and lily, all tucked safe and warm within the glass box-like houses that will open soon. Wild grape and rose send new length of branch across patio and veranda, iron gate and porch. More dogs here. They bare teeth quietly, letting us know in canine terms that this is their territory and to keep moving, and we do. Honeysuckle. One catches its heavy scent before the enormous vine comes into view. Like jasmine and rainwater, it fills the air in small side street where Joe Hostel and our now familiar room wake to a new day. From above us, the sound of pipes, of water racing, and travelers like ourselves awake, packing both water bottle and lukewarm Heineken tall boys into backpacks and netted bag for train. Bucharest is enormous and considered by many who travel here, spend any amount of time, to be the Paris of the East. A lofty goal, to be sure, and I pause at the intersections, at the giant communist-era public plazas, more than a little perplexed, in hopes to better understand the association. This, the farthest outpost of romance language that ties the city, as well as its inhabitants, irrevocably to the West. Amid the forgotten architecture, spindly leaved trees, ghetto palms, as my Uncle Charlie from Chicago would call them, climb with enthusiasm out of mansard roofs, from fantasy hotels, long abandoned to time, as well as the ravages of totalitarian regime. Rectilinear concrete apartment blocks and plate glass windows, window sills, and festive geranium, everywhere in pink and white, hot red-orange blossoms that compete for attention with gauzy polyester gold and lace curtains. Everywhere, the magic of Cinderella gowns, inflammable lengths and colors. Overall, we feel it is a safe neighborhood, at least by day. And being walking distance to the station, we truly rest here, enjoy good coffee, cappuccino, and birdsong. Our host presents a morning table of pastry and fresh pear slices outside our window. Adriansky and his wife Nina join us, asking gentle questions using the English that he knows. How long you travel? America is a good place, yes? Why are you here? This last question resonating in a quiet way that deserved an answer. My wife has good friends who are Bulgarian, I answer him directly and with a smile. And we have never been to Romania. And so here we are, taking the slow route across the country by train. Adriansky smiles, and lighting a fresh cigarette, conveys in Romanian what I said to Nina, who then also smiles, golden tooth and patterned headscarf. Good, good. She repeats these two words slowly, all the while stroking the head and long back of a large tabby cat well-positioned on her ample lap. In slow and metered drags, he continues to smoke, to nod, and to ask questions that allow him to show off his command of the English language and American culture. He knows and likes the film Rocky with Sylvester Stallone and is thoroughly engaged with any information we may have about this actor's personal life, as well as other films he may have starred in. We laugh, all of us, and enjoy the short camaraderie that comes with sharing stories from afar, from coffee, and that most resolute and empty, articulate sensation that can only, I believe, be found with nicotine and morning. Ah, Romania, and to travel again with my lovely Megan. Rejoice. In the early afternoon, we meet our train, an ancient Italian model from the 1980s, perhaps earlier. Its worn and plush interior is forgiving, and we sink back into the high-backed seats to watch the city recede from view and be replaced with heavy rain and red poppy delineating both tracks and field beside us. We soon enough discover that the windows, in fact, can be opened, a feature of travel lost, perhaps for safety reasons, on newer trains. And with the glass panels opened as much as possible, we refresh ourselves, our hands and faces out the open windows. We laugh and cheer, and amid soft rain, rain, rain on our faces, we open Transylvanian Pilsners and celebrate our good fortune with day-old pizza slices, ever-present rain streaming down and out and in the open window beside us. The landscape is pastoral, and then again factories rise into view, smokestacks and crumbling furnace, industry lost or on some kind of forlorn hold. There are many cows and fields of agriculture, broad bean, and what I believe are young sunflowers reaching up for the day. Megan plays the ink spots on her new DVD player. We stretch out now, the velvety sound, as well as the repeated cadence of track and wheels below, soon lull us off to sleep and Romanian dreams. Hours pass in buzzed slumber, and it is late when we are awoken, quite abruptly, I would add, by a small man in uniform who requests our passports and travel documents in a curt manner and without a smile. "Where are you going?" he asks. "Why are you traveling from Romania?" His questions are resolute, and we again explain that we are merely curious, have not been to Bucharest or Romania before. "And where is it, your final destination?" he asks quizzically, documents and passports still in hand. "We are traveling to Ruse, the Bulgarian city on the Danube," we answer. It is at this point that both his demeanor and attention shift, and he is now quite animated and jovial, and laughing, points out the carriage window to the neighborhoods and buildings, the parks that are now rolling past. "Why, you are here already now," and laughing good-naturedly, hands Megan all of our legal papers. "And welcome," he adds with a large grin and dramatic flourish. "Welcome to Ruse. Welcome to Bulgaria." And a song I made, a short song, came into my head about this as yet unknown place we traveled to together. And I'll share it. "And I will marry you, and you will marry me, and we will fall in love, and we will wait and see, and we'll drink warm milk by the Danube shore. Yes, we'll drink warm milk by the Danube shore." Imagine repeated stanzas and with vocal enthusiasm. Open beer or bottle of wine. Continue to sing and or dance together amid animals both tame and wild. With gentle intent, we make our way slowly through this new city. Ruse sits on the shore of the Danube River and separates Bulgaria from its neighbor, Romania, in a clear and defining manner. Everywhere, the elegant Cyrillic language printed, illuminated, spray-painted, all of it completely unintelligible to ourselves. We again laugh, we have to, and realize that to travel here, to spend time, requires a sense of humor, as well as an earnest ability to decipher visually what we may need and or want, from toilets to the availability of tomatoes or wine. Fortunately, Ruse is an intimate city, and even without language, we find our little hotel, an English guest house, a few streets back from the large plaza, in a neighborhood and not far from the river. Our innkeeper, V, a strong, bright woman with a teenage son, is engaging and speaks English well. She shows us to a large and simple room with tall windows and invites us to a beer later, if we feel like it. Her Bulgarian accent is strong alongside her English. She has a nice smile and tells us that the Bulgarian beer Stara Zagora is delightful as well as inexpensive. The guest house is in fact hers, and there is a necessary economy to her movements and decisions made. "Ah, ah," she says again, and motions both Megan and I into our room. But for now, I think maybe you rest. And with that, she was gone, and we left to ourselves to fall asleep in our own pile of unpacked luggage and snacks from the train. Jars of pickles, brown bread, scarves and sketchbooks, and most importantly, each other. In the early morning hours, I hear a rooster's call for a new day. The blankets here are warm, and the room, as it turns out, is unheated at night. Chickens, too, can be heard, from somewhere across the street, somewhere inside the old tile-roofed house to the east. Their excited banter is reassuring. I heard them yesterday as we arrived, saw the red comb high in an upper window, shielded partly from view by grapevine and climbing rose, soft pink, the color of bubblegum and new bride. It spills over and climbs again, the painted wrought green iron that separates the house from the street. We fall asleep again, for a long time, I think, the blue sky above us, and all of Rousse, it appears, continues to rest as well. Only swallows, house martins, wheel and return outside our window, fully awake. They fly effortless against the sun-worn facades of communist-era apartment complex, the first buildings, the tallest here to catch the morning light. Again and once more they turn in arcing figure eights. They chatter far above our sleeping heads. Summer, they call in unison again and again. Summer, summer. And so like this, morning arrives on darkest eggplant wings and crested white. They reel before us, determined, and relatively blissful, engage a world that we below can only guess at. Sleeping windows stir awake, shade and curtains drawn, trucks now heard outside, and voices gentle on the sidewalk below. It is an old city, Rousse, and being downriver from Vienna has a similar Art Nouveau quality to many of its buildings and homes. Sinuous curves and lines that resemble plant motif amid bare brick and concrete veined with stone. Everywhere, wild pie cherries say hello to passersby. Along the banks of the Duna River, more cherries. In branches shaking, we see three young men climbing amongst the upper branches where birds have left ripe fruit. The river churns, its surface sleepy, and the color of old coffee is silty, and travels fast just below its surface. It is a wild place down here, away from the city. Vegetation grows thick, and we are reminded visually of the Mississippi, the far Romanian shoreline forested with cottonwood and ubiquitous alder. Even here, many of the same plants we know from home, blackberry and woodbine, grow thick along the wall of quarry stone that shelters Rousse from the flooded banks in winter and early spring. On our walk, we encounter a small dog. There are many in this city, and we learn that it is the Bulgarian custom to catch, to neuter, and again release back to the streets, rather than euthanize stray animals. It is common enough to see wild packs of family dogs ambling about the quieter side streets, and especially here within the wilds the riverbank provides. The dog we meet is sandy-colored and at first skittish, yet with friendly tail and curiosity as to who we are. Perhaps we have treats. We visit for a few minutes, and Megan, who I have learned always travels with food, pulls from her purse a large piece of crusty bread, from our recent train adventure, I imagine, and passes it on to the little dog, who scoops it up enthusiastically, wagging its brown tail. Having decided that we are now friends, she allows us gentle pets. Her coat is warm and soft to the touch, her brown eyes peaceful. Dunav, we call her, for the river. And it is a good feeling to think of this little creature and to know that she is happy. A few days later, when we travel again in late morning to the very rural village of Katselovo, about an hour or so beyond the city by car, our driver, Mariam, a large man, is a friendly sort of fellow. A man of few words, he motions to the different villages and animals we encounter, saying aloud their name in Bulgarian. It is a fun game, and we find ourselves pointing to virtually anything for to know its local term, and try to repeat it back, well as we might to Mariam. A gesture that results more often than not in laughter amongst the three of us. The road through the three villages, Shtaklevo, Nisovo, and Katselovo, is agricultural, and interrupted often by farm equipment and carts pulled by donkey or oxen. Farmland, beans, wheat, and sunflower. Red field poppy band the edges of these fields everywhere. They catch the eye, as well as the heart, every time we see them come into view. Crickets and their stringed instruments settle close at the woodland perimeter. We hear them and ask Mariam to pull over many times for the chance to take in the view and their song. The sun now high, and we ride on. Surely an hour has passed, and still we are quite far from our destination, Katselovo. More donkey carts. The road's quite rutted here. We travel slower than before, and enjoy the other travelers aboard the open carts. They wave, and in blue cloth skirts and overalls, smile onto us in colored headscarves. The surprise black and white flash of magpies. They hop or skip in and about the tall grasses roadside, completely alert. We continue to descend alongside pine and conifer forest and up again, through the high stone quarry-like basin that is the Ruzensky Lom. The villages here exist as in a fairy tale. Perhaps it is the filtered light itself, the cobbled streets and wooded lanes, the gentle preambles to nowhere that caught our attention, would make us first fall for this little part of the world. By afternoon, we have reached our village, Katselovo, and the small stone and wood cottage we are meant to stay in. Mariam bids us adieu, and pulling out a half empty bottle of plum brandy from behind the driver's seat of his fancy Volkswagen, lifts the bottle in a joyful toast at having found the village and the house, and taking a generous swig, tells us he will return about this time the following day to collect us. His grin is again genuine, and he speeds away, bottle positioned conveniently between his legs, and honking, waves an arm out the driver's window, and like Santa, is gone. Would you like a beer? Megan asks me, as we stand in front of this old, run-down house we have worked so hard together to find, to purchase, travel to. Laughing, I accept the lukewarm pilsner. And we toast, standing in the overgrown front pasture, looking at the house itself, the village and hills beyond. 8 cows, 9, 10 more now move quietly across the soft green valley nearby. And at the rear, their shepherd. Udders full, they swing as the old girls walk, their bells and dogs calling from farm to farm being the only sound. In the day's tall grass and meadow flower, we sit in warm sun on our crazy stone porch, listening again to crickets, enjoying warm beer and a profound sense of accomplishment together. It is late afternoon, and the light, now angling, catches the grass in its spring green gold. Blackbirds call in the thicket below the house, this our Bulgarian country home. There are plum and crabapple tree that shelter us from view, and it is here at dusk Megan calls out excitedly, "Look, right there in the field, a fox." And sure enough, amid the wild grasses, on a path well-defined and clearly its own, a beautiful rusty orange, dog-like, cat-like creature, very elegant face, and with pointed ears and paw aloft, quietly looks back at the two of us with some measure of detached concern. We have peed in the field, of course, and our scent certainly detected by the true resident here. After a moment, he resumes his course, head down and trotting silently off again, invisible in the dry and overgrown shelter of fruit trees at the field's edge. Back to family, we imagine, a warm den of foxes like himself, a safe and wild lair, perhaps with whimpering pups, and to sleep together, much like we do at home. Three dogs and ourselves in bed. A little cramped, to be sure, but warm as well, and happy. Evening draws close now. The birds no longer in the sky. We hear them roosting about the stable and barn adjacent the house. The filtered light of evening arrives, and the hills and pine forest out the bedroom windows grow larger. Again, I am reminded of fairy tales and understand better the dynamic relationships that may occur when our wilder brethren play a larger role in our day-to-day lives. Certainly, the hills about us are filled with wolf and bear, wildcat and eagle. Animals we never see appear before us. A fox in our meadow. A stork rebuilds its nest atop an old chimney near the Orthodox church. It is a short jump across time. The darkened branches of evening forest rise below us. A she-wolf in scarlet shawl and wily grace, aloft on two legs, she carries a woven basket filled with the pale bones of naughty children and fresh strawberries and sugar. Dark eyes flash, and she readjusts her blue scarf, branches thick above her head, moving deftly now, clumsy on two legs. The floor of leaves and young bracken crackle beneath her, length of claw and sharp tooth, dry blood and matted fur. Pine needle's soft, silent blanket, she makes her way to wooded edge, and as crescent moon and field of star awake, she is taken, her wild thoughts and heart stolen by this moon, by all the moons. It is her hour. This is true. And she must tip her head. She must. Ears back, alert and back. Bare whitest teeth, and against better judgment, she howls. For it is a wild night again, and it is her hour. She howls again, and long into the dark her sound is felt. Forest creature, elf and gnome, beware. For it is she who may now discern a path that others may only guess at. A single last cry into the night, and clutching woolen shawl close about her, she is off. Runs to the feral perimeter of tree and thorn. Beetle, spider, cricket rest, and the heavy scent of cow dung, of linden's golden flower, settle in amongst sleeping farm and tended field. The glow of curtain windows beckon her. Oily smoke from chimneys curl, and dew settles upon young bean and tomato. Potatoes courageous and star-like blossom, fleshy bush that grow close to warm brick along the garden edge of village home. Disregarding safety, the she-wolf advances. On all four legs, she is fast. Her wiry frame negotiates both fence and wooden gate, her snout and nose at work. There are dogs here, many, and they too smell her, for she is both family and not family. And in confusion they cry out, barking they will, all night, for a sister lost, an enemy close by. A master from within the house looks out into the night, eyes blind and tired, ignorant of her passage. The she-wolf flashes, bares teeth again, for the night is old now, and garden patch, distant hill grow blue, pale blue, gray with morning. She too is growing tired, and trotting disappears behind the hedge, grand tail in the empty field. Slink and turn and slink again, along cobblestone and another garden, dandelion beneath her feet. Ahead more houses, all quiet still. And finally, among rows of overgrown horse chestnut, she pauses, knowing that she is safe. There will be no one here, she thinks to herself. A short rest to scratch her belly, to lick forepaws, and in the far distance, the call of dogs. Baring teeth again, she knows that she is safe from them. They bark now for morning. Wake up, master, they call together. Wake up, cow and goat. A new day is here. The she-wolf smells the forest now, her home and labyrinth of conifer and glen. She will return and wait, curl herself against old maple and lair beneath thick trunk and hollowed root. Snail shells, dry grass and scat. She stretches claw and arcing back, curling about herself, again relaxes. Golden eyes close. Awaiting nightfall, she rests, content.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band.
Thank you very much for that. That is my most beautiful birthday present that I could have ever gotten. Ever.
Oh my gosh. It was really special to share it.
Thank you.
And share it here today.
Will you, do you think that you will, Adam is an avid writer, as you can hear by listening to that. Do you think that you will expand on that and turn it into like a whole little novel?
I don't know. I'm not sure about novels, but I think that as a short story, it's that she-wolf.
That she-wolf she's really just something. Good.
You know what I'd like to do, I think, if I were to do anything, were to enjoy taking time to make the accompanying
like some
sketches.
Illustrations.
The illustrations, yeah, that'd be great.
Adam also
the woolen shawl
paints
and
he's
Wiley Grace.
He is himself the one man show that that Simon and Garfunkel are singing about in that song.
Well, I don't know, but that song reminds me of college and being on those old trains, you know, smoking cigarettes and have, you know, crusty bread, right? Yeah.
It's always about crusty bread.
We haven't had a chance to really travel this year, of course, like all of everyone listening and all of us. And so to share a little something that means a lot from a long time ago, I hope everybody can enjoy in their own way and find room to laugh. And
it's amazingly beautiful.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Love you.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much, Voice of Vashon. This is Megan Hastings, and this has been the Captain Jammer Follies. Wishing everybody a happy, safe, and healthy New Year to come.